This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
8 out of Malaysia's top 10 public listed companies that scored the highest in corporate reporting's transparency are government-linked companies. Now, a Malaysian Resources Corp, or MRCB, topped that list, followed by KLCC Property and Real Estate Investment Trust, as well as Malaysia Airports Holdings.
Namely, on top of the other companies in this list included Unisem, MISC, Sime Darby, and lastly, a Petronas unit, Petchem. Oh no, actually all three of them, Petchem, Petgas and Petdagangan, all scored high for this corporate reporting transparency. The survey itself was designed to establish the status of anti-corruption practices of Malaysia's 100 largest listed companies by market cap.
Yeah, based on the information that was available in the public domain. Now, anti-corruption programs have, of course, grown stronger since the first report in 2017, as well as their corporate liability readiness in terms of having established adequate procedures ahead of the enforcement of corporate liability for corruption offences. Now, however, Malaysian companies still have a lot of work to do to establish adequate procedures to fight graft prior to the enforcement of these corporate liability provisions. Now, the question is, okay, you have all this, you know who are the best players. But I want to know, does this actually translate to better stock market performance? So I did a bit of a run on Bloomberg and had a look at it from 2019 and also against 2018. Who were the top performers on the KLCI? And actually, there's actually no conclusive evidence whether because you have better corporate governance, better reporting, you do have better results on the stock market because it's mixed. So, for example, top of the list this year since 2019, best performer for KLCI is MISC, which is a JLC and is featured here. Now, is that due to the corporate reporting or just due to the fact that they're getting much better charter rates for their fleets? I don't know. But yeah, on the other hand, if we look at it last year, they also continue to do well. So maybe there is. I think if we run the survey a bit longer, maybe it does show that if you have better track records in terms of corporate governance, your shareholders do reward you.
So I guess the question here is, where do you put your priority, right? Is it anti-corruption practices or is it the bottom line? And that's a tough question because for public sector companies, it should be the bottom line.
No, but you do need to have transparency when it comes to corporate results. And this is what the survey is trying to say, right? That if you are more transparent, this is better for you. And what the survey shows is that the GLCs do better in that. But we always have this push and pull as to whether GLCs actually perform better. So, okay, you might have better reporting, but does this translate to better share price performance?
Yeah. Basically, whether or not this translates into a better investor confidence in your business practices, right? But then the thing about that is that anti-corruption practices is not the only way to ensure good governance. And there are other elements to governance as well that maybe aren't necessarily receiving the same amount of attention. Because things like bribery risk assessments, policies on donations and sponsorship, and communication on anti-corruption and monitoring, all of these, according to the survey, they're still coming in as rather weak overall. So maybe if companies manage to bring all of these factors up to par, then we will actually start to see that correlation become stronger between their good practices, good governance practices, and shareholder reward.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at one company which stands out to me, which wasn't listed here, but I think ranks high in terms of corporate reporting transparency and has a good reputation in terms of ensuring the rights of minority shareholders, is probably Nestle. I mean, it's a top gainer, it's a top performer in the KLCI since 2018. The percentage change is 47%, guys. So yeah, markets tend to reward those companies where they feel confident about what they're going to do with the money. There is transparency. In the longer term, I don't see how this can be bad for any corporate to actually pursue greater corporate reporting transparency.
I guess it's also about information, right? As an investor, you want as much information about the company that you can get. And yes, sometimes the news, when we see news reports, there's a lot of noise, but the most direct form of information is the corporate reporting itself.
And what is good is actually the GLC spearheading this, I think, because it has to be driven very much by government companies.
Wasn't this part of Khazanah's mandate like 10 years ago, where they were pushing this to take GLCs to the next level? And that was, I think, the mandate at that point was to make sure that GLCs stood on a much bigger, went to the next level so that they became
kind of role models for the rest of the industry.
For the rest of the industry, yes, and the rest of the market.
I think whether or not they have actually achieved that next level might be under question. But nevertheless, good to see that good governance is coming more to the forefront in terms of importance placed on it. But also in some other news this morning, there has been some reports over the fact that Malaysia detained a Cambodian opposition leader. So Malaysia detained Mo So Chua, who's the deputy chief of Cambodia's banned opposition party. And this came after Phnom Penh accused her and other self-exiled opposition leaders of seeking to return home to stage a coup against the current prime minister of Cambodia, Hun Sen. Now, I do believe Mo So Chua and the other Cambodian detainees have now been released, according to Human Rights Commissioner, an official of the Human Rights Commission, Gerald Joseph. They have been put up in a hotel for now. But the question does remain over why Malaysia detained them in the first place.
Now, this detention also happened at about the same time as Sam Rainsy, founder of the opposition party, prepared to fly from Paris to Bangkok, vowing to return to Cambodia this weekend to lead demonstrations against Hun Sen's one-party rule. Thailand has also said it will not allow him to transit.
Yeah, Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad said yesterday that Mo So Chua would not be turned over to Cambodia, but would instead be deported to an undetermined third country. Malaysia also detained two other opposition leaders trying to fly to Thailand this week.
So the Prime Minister did say we don't want them to use Malaysia as a base for their struggle in other countries, and emphasised that Malaysia was bound by the principle of non-interference in the affairs of its ASEAN neighbours. Now, all of this is also happening against the backdrop of the EU deliberating whether or not to strip Cambodia of its preferential trade status because of its deteriorating rights situation. Now, the EU is, of course, Cambodia's largest trading partner, accounting for 45% of its exports last year. The question here out of this story for me is why the ASEAN principle of non-interference should extend to detaining opposition leaders at the behest of the current ruling government in Cambodia.
How is that non-interference? You are interfering
on behalf of the government.
Yeah.
And it will then be used for political means, right? I mean, it's not really about the spirit of ASEAN, promoting ASEAN as a trading bloc or political bloc. I don't see how it has anything to do with the ASEAN spirit, if you ask me.
And so Cambodia has issued these requests to a number of countries. So Indonesia is another one, because Mo So Chua, not that long ago, was speaking at a conference in Jakarta, and that was interrupted by the Cambodian ambassador to Indonesia. And subsequently, Indonesia did say that they had received a request from Cambodia not to entertain these opposition leaders, to detain them because of in the ASEAN spirit, which I think is basically feels to me that Cambodia is using other countries to do basically kind of to do your dirty work, right?
Yeah, to stamp out political freedom
and
the right of speech.
Because the situation in Cambodia is quite dire. You know, Hun Sen has been the leader of the country for going on 30 years, and he has extended his leadership again through the recent elections, in which his party won 100% of the seats in parliament. And that to me is kind of dodgy, right? Because how can one party win 100% of the seats?
A democracy with 100% win, that is an interesting idea.
I know. I mean, I'm sure lots of democratic parties in around the world would be turning to Cambodia to say, what's your secret, if they actually believed that it was done through legitimate means.
Yeah, India's probably looking at them and like, how does this even happen? But when it comes to this, I think watching what the EU does will be interesting, because the EU is Cambodia's largest trading partner, right? Accounting for 45% of its exports last year. And the best way to get anything done is through, well, money. It really is. Like, trade is essential. As we've seen, the trade war has done so much over the last year, 2 years. If the EU, which is the single biggest largest trading partner, decides to relinquish its preferential status with Cambodia, I wonder how that'll affect their bottom line.
Or whether Cambodia will shrug it off and say the EU is victimizing them. You hear this kind of back and forth all over the world, basically, when you have other countries basically protesting human rights situations elsewhere. So it's going to be, I think, a bit of a difficult situation to resolve. But of course, also speaking of regional issues, here, Malaysia's cabinet is due to make a final decision on whether or not to ratify the CPTPP, and that is the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. And this was announced by the Economic Action Council yesterday.
Now, the CPTPP, and that's a lot of alphabets in one go, is of course the deal that rose from the ashes of the TPP, once championed by President Barack Obama. Now, the deal covers much more than just the exchange of goods and services, with broader requirements in areas such as labour, environment and government procurement. Now, its members are Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore and Vietnam. Phew, did I miss anybody?
So everyone, basically.
Yeah, no, well, that constitutes 13.5% of the world economy. I want to know how this differs from RCEP, actually.
RCEP is a little bit broader. I think it's also got a wider number of players. That, of course, has not also been signed in Bangkok. It was supposed to be.
You know, Shani, when you said President Barack Obama, it feels like a lifetime ago when he was president. It's just been so long.
Yeah, but it's funny because Donald Trump's tenure as president, at least this time round, is also coming to an end. So nothing lasts forever. But right now we are heading into the 7:30 news. But first, a couple of messages. So be sure to stay tuned. We'll be back after that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.